Okay, I'd like to welcome everyone to Laurel Mount Highlands Area Narcotics Anonymous, their 5th Annual Unity Retreat. We would like you to join us in celebrating the recovery and fellowship that we have come to know, need, and deserve in our lives. We encourage you to share in our NA Unity through your experience, strength, and hope in our wide variety of workshops. This is an open retreat. All are welcome to attend, however. We ask that only addicts share in the workshops. In accordance with our 7th tradition, we are fully self-supporting. Thank you for registering. You should remember that our actions this weekend are a direct reflection on Narcotics Anonymous as a whole. It's carrying the NA message, not the mess. The NA message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Our message is hope and the promise of freedom. When all is said and done, our primary purpose can only be to carry the message to the addict that still suffers, because that is all we have to give. But no addict anywhere need die from the horrors of addiction. Basic text, page 65. The NA way. In Narcotics Anonymous, we are presented with a dilemma. When NA members identify themselves as addicts and alcoholics, crack addicts, or talk about living clean and sober, the clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, that one drug is separate from the rest. Narcotics Anonymous makes no distinction between drugs. Identification as addicts is all-inclusive, allowing us to concentrate on our similarities and our differences. To the press, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity to level press reading on film. If any members of the press are present, please come to the registration table where you will be referred to our PI chairperson. We respectfully ask that no pictures be taken during the interview received by the press. If any NA members are approached by the press, please refer them to the registration table. Remember, no one person represents NA. Please do not attempt to represent NA to the press alone. Thank you. Okay. Good morning, everyone. I'm an addict. My name is Juana. I'd like to welcome you to this workshop entitled God as I Understand. Will you please help me open with a moment of silence for the addict who still suffers, followed by the serenity prayer? A moment of silence, please. God, grant me the serenity to accept things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Just for today. Can we have a reading of We Do Recover? We Do Recover, please.
My name's
Hey, Roberta. Thank you, Roberta. Okay, now it's time to introduce the first speaker. Her name is Kim. She is from the Swapasna area. Her home group is the Thursday New Freedom Group in Narcotics Anonymous. And I love her very much. Here's Kim.
Her family, my name's Kim, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Kim.
And like, I hate standing behind podiums. I've been going through a whole lot of changes in my life. And this recovery process that I've been in for 3 years has taken me to so many places. And about 8 months ago, it took me on a new journey. And like before that, like I started getting this understanding of God. And like all of a sudden it was gone again. Because like I just couldn't understand. I couldn't understand what was going on and why it was going on. Like about 5 weeks ago, my sponsor put me on this assignment. And what it was every day I had to recognize a God experience in my life. Every day I had to find something that God was doing in my life. 2 days after she put me on the assignment, Justin called me and asked me to do God as we understand God. And I said, I have to call you back. And I called my sponsor and said, well, since I don't know what God's doing in my life, I can't do this, right? I can call him back and tell him no. And she said, oh, no. By then, you're going to have all these days of figuring out what God's doing in your life to be able to share. Every day is a new experience for me. Every day I have a different understanding. When I first got clean, I need to tell you that, like, I was clean for 2 years and 10 months, and I went back out and used. And I went out for a year. And when I came back, the thing that I knew above anything else is that, like, I really had to find a God. I really had to find something that was greater than Kim. Because before that, there wasn't anything. It was me. I wasn't going to change anything about me. I wasn't going to put anything in me anymore. But, like, I just wasn't going to change. And, like, and where that took me was I couldn't stand what I was doing clean any longer. And, like, I had to do something, so I used. And, like, when I got clean this time, I, like, knew that something had to be different, and so I started looking. And like anybody else, like, I started looking in the churches. And I went from one to another to another. And I truly thought that, like, that's where I was going to find him, because that's where other people were finding him. And I didn't know where else to go. I knew that I had the rooms. And I knew that people in the rooms found God. And they found religion. See, I thought that that's what I had to have. I thought I had to have that religion part of it. And, like, I'm just not there today. Okay? I found the spirituality part. And, like, when I found that, some things started happening. And I started doing some changing. When I was a year clean, I was going to church on a regular basis. I was staying clean. I was doing my step work, and like, I really thought things were going good. And I got this phone call in the middle of the night, and you know those dreaded phone calls that you get. And this one was for, I had a niece that was 9 years old. And she had been hit by a car, and she died. And now at this time, like, my family didn't talk to me. I'd been clean a year. We had no communication at all. And like, when this happened, like, it wasn't the church that I called. It wasn't the women in the church that came to me when they found out. The women in Narcotics Anonymous came to me and was right there by my side. And so, like, that started me wondering. In January of, in December of 99, like, I got married in a church, the same church I had been going to. And in May, I left this marriage. And, like, it wasn't the women from the church that were telling me it was going to be okay. Like, it was the women in the rooms. And then I went back into this marriage. And I went through a whole lot of different feelings. And, like, in February of this year, like I made that decision that like this marriage was done. And when I left that marriage, I left the church. And like I fell into the arms of the women in Narcotics Anonymous. And they kept telling me, you know, just pray about this. Pray about this, pray about this. Well, all of a sudden my God was this religious God. And like, and I couldn't pray to him. I couldn't talk to him because I was getting a divorce. I couldn't talk to him because here I had been screwed everything up one more time in my life. And like, he was tired of it. And what happened was, I hooked up with a newcomer that had a problem with cocaine. Didn't have a problem with alcohol. And he loved motorcycles. And so like when I hooked up with him, like I didn't need a God anymore. I didn't need the rooms as much. And it was okay to sit in the bars while he drank. And I do. And I can remember one night he was sleeping. And I knew that he had been drinking. And I went over and he was sound asleep. And I left his house. And like I drove. And I don't know if any of you are familiar with Conneaut Lake, but like there's bars everywhere. And I'm driving. And at every bar, I was looking to see what kind of crowd it was, to see which one had the biggest crowd that I could go into. Because if I go in there and drink my pot, I'll just blend in. And it was a Friday night, and it was 8:45. And our meeting in Meadville was out at 9. And so like I'm driving around, and I drove into this parking lot, and all of a sudden it was like, okay, God, like I just don't want to walk in that door, because if I walk in that door, I know I'm done. I know I lost. And I pulled out of the parking lot and I went down to Perkins, because a lot of people go to Perkins after the meeting. And so I'm sitting in the parking lot at Perkins, and I said, if I'm going to stay clean, God, like, have somebody show up. And of course they did. And I told them. I told them where I was, what I was doing. And so like I stayed clean that night. And from that night on, like I started with this contact with my higher power one more time. You know. But like I'm not looking in a church. I'm not looking in a book. I'm like looking in the rooms. Because there's this thing that you guys tell me about, it's called spirituality. And like, and I see it in some people. And like, I desperately, desperately need that in my life. One of the things that like I look at is what God gives me every day. Okay? When my niece died, like she gave me back my family. Because now, my mom calls me. My mom tells me that she's proud of me. That is something I have not had, ever. I did not grow up in a family where there were hugs and kisses, I love yous, and boy, you're doing a good job. I grew up with a mom that thought being a mom was like being a best friend, and she told me everything. She told me when she ran around. She told me when my sister didn't belong to my dad. Because that's what best friends do. We tell each other everything. Like, I don't do that with my daughter. I love my children dearly, but, like, that's not what it's about. See, because that showed me what was wrong, not what was right. And today, like, I try real hard to find the right. In almost everything I do. Like, I'm not perfect at this, and I'm never going to be. But I'll tell you, the God of my understanding grows and grows and grows. I was at a spiritual retreat 2 weeks ago. And, like, my soon-to-be ex-husband is in recovery. And he was there. And I've had a real hard time with that. And then when I knew I was coming here, it was like such a relief because, like, he doesn't come up here. You know? And like, I'm in a new relationship. And, like, and I just needed that break. I needed to get away. And, like, yesterday I'm sitting there eating lunch. Thoroughly enjoying this weekend. Take that last bite of food and look up. And he walked in the door. And, like, and of course, you know, I like to yell at my God sometimes. And I said, look, that's just enough, okay? Like, he ain't supposed to be here. This is my place. But, like, it's okay. Because she's an addict in recovery. He's allowed to be here. You know, I can't single out who's allowed to come to these meetings and who has to stay home. You know, that's not what it's about today. I need to share that, like, when we did clean time last night, when we did the countdown, for the last 3 years, this girl that got clean, 1 week after me, every retreat that we go to, anything that they do clean time with, like, she has always stood up next to me. We've been through the death of my niece. We've been through the death of another using addict. We've been through so much together. And, like, she called me. Pretty sure it was Tuesday. She called me Tuesday and asked me to come over. And she's been real distant in the past week and a half. And I haven't seen her at meetings. And I kept calling and saying, what's that? I'm just not feeling good. So, like, I went over there that Tuesday. And I sat down on her couch. She sat down on the other couch. And she looked at me. And I knew. She was using. And, like, when we saw it for 3 years last night, okay, my sponsor was right beside me. And I said, I can't stand up. And she said, yeah, you can, because you need to stand up so that someday she can come back in. And, like, I don't understand this part of it right now. Okay? But God is my understanding. Puts things in my life so that I learn every day. And, like, I'm just not sure what I'm learning from this one. But I know I'm learning something. You know. Last night when we closed the meeting that we had here, the chairperson said, like, say a prayer for that person who's, like, going to pick up tonight knowing that they're going to die. And, like, that prayer was for her. And, like, I know that people come and go in this program. I've seen it, and I hate it. You know, I have a sister that's 1 year older than me, and she's dying from this disease. And, like, she doesn't have it. She doesn't. It's a game. And, like, and I can't give her what I got. I can't give my friend what I got. Like, they have to come and get it. And, like, and I don't understand that process. You know? But, like, I know that, like, God brought me on this journey. And I'm at this particular spot in my life. And, like, sometime down the road, I'm going to know. And I'm going to know why. You know? And I'm going to accept the fact that, like, she's just like me. She's an addict. And, like, she was in a relationship. or is still in one, that is like I told her 3 months ago. Like, you're either going to have to move or you're going to have to use. Because, like, the feelings, you're just not going to be able to work through them. Not in the same house. And, like, she chose to stay. Like, I was in a relationship with my husband, but, like, I knew that, like, my recovery, once again, was at a standstill. And I was either going to stay in use or I was going to move on in my recovery. And, like, and I made that decision to, like, move on in my recovery. He said, God is my understanding. I don't understand when it starts. I don't understand when these processes start. Why? A long time ago, I was told to take that question mark away and just put a period there. And, like, I forget to do that sometimes. My God has brought me so far in the past 3 years. He's brought me to a place where I never imagined that I would be. To be clean is one thing. But, like, to find this person inside of me that, like, I have always, always wanted to show and wasn't allowed to show. So I wasn't allowed to show who I wanted to be. I wasn't allowed to be that happy little girl. Because somebody was always taking that away. I wasn't allowed to be happy in a relationship. Because, like, I wasn't good enough. And, like, and when you're told that, you believe that. And see, I don't believe that today. Yeah, I just truly do not believe that today. I have a struggle sometimes when people are nice to me. Because, like, I'm not used to that. And I'm not just talking about the person I'm in a relationship with. I'm talking about anybody in my life. Because if you're nice to me, you want something. When you call and say, you just need to talk, I'm sure by the end of that conversation, you've asked me for something. There's always a catch. And the reason that I do that, that I feel that way, is because that's what I've always done. Like, that niceness came with that attachment, no matter what. Like, I work real hard at not doing that today. Just to be nice. Just to show up. Last Sunday we had an area meeting. And before the meeting, I called another recovering addict. And I told her, like, I'm writing up my resignation. I'm PI here. I'm writing up my resignation. I'm done. It's too much of a struggle. I don't want to be at the area anymore. I'm done. I go to area. I'm sitting there with it. I pick up The Miracle Happens. And the front page on the bottom, 10 excuses why not to do service work. That's how my God works today. Needless to say, the resignation went in the garbage. And I went on. He shows me these things. Because a little bit later in that area meeting, I thought lit chair shut down. No notice, just shut down. With a letter stating that she thought she wasn't an addict anymore. See, the God of her understanding took her to a different place. I don't want to go there. Not today, not tomorrow, not ever. Because the minute I don't feel that I belong in Narcotics Anonymous, I lost. Even if I don't pick up, I lost. And like just for today, I don't want to lose. My God has put so many people in my life since I've come into recovery. If anybody would have told me that I'd have had the friends I have today, I'd have told them, yeah, right. Because we're all so different. And there's certain people that I just didn't hang around. You know? Because y'all were above me. Everybody was better. But like today, There ain't nobody better than Kim. Because you're all my equals. See, God showed me that. The other thing that I want to share about is, like, I have this job. And my job, I have a title, and it's called Homemaker Educator. And what I do is I go into homes, and I work with people that are involved with children and youth or some other way in the courts or their family struggling. I help men and women put a home together, keep it clean, keep it organized, pay the bills, because they were never taught how. Now, sometimes my job doesn't work that way. Sometimes these children get taken away. But you know what? Like, every day is a reward for me. Every day. Because it shows me where I don't ever want to go. But it shows me the courage to keep going. In my job, they send me to training. And 2 months ago, or a month ago, they sent me to this training at Indiana University, PA. It's called the Madden Training. And it's everything about addiction. They have everything there. Internet addiction. Inhalant. You know, all these different conferences that you could go to. And like, I'm sitting in there in a room full of professional people, and I'm looking around, and the girl that went with me, I said, man, I have got to go home. And this woman, sitting two rows back, this woman was talking about something, and this woman, two rows back, put her hand up, and the lady said, you have a question, and she said, so why don't you tell us addicts how to stay away? I was floored. I thought I was the only addict in the room. I got a list of names and numbers from there. That woman had 18 years clean. She was 36 years old, had 18 years clean. Like, that's how my God works, because he shows me that we're everywhere and that I belong everywhere where I show up. I'm amazed on a daily basis with the God of my understanding. He brings me to these places so that I can hear other people share and see what's really truly going on with Kim. And then I'm ready to give it back. I'm an addict named Kim, and so let me share.
Our next speaker is Mary Kay, and you are, what group are you from?
I'm from York.
And your area?
York area.
York?
1738 B, York South Drive.
Okay, Mary Kay.
I'm going to sit over here, that's right. Okay. Put the microphone.
Oh, the microphone.
Oh,
I forgot about the microphone.
I had to. You have to.
Hi, I'm an addict. My name's Mary Kay.
Hey.
Good to be here. Thank you to the committee for asking me to come out this morning and share. It's an honor. We were here last year, and the way you all put your this spiritual retreat together is really, really nice. We enjoy it, and everybody is really nice, and we plan on coming here, you know, in the future. On the way up here, like, I need to say that Dwayne and I were talking, and I said, man, I said, I just don't want to do this. I just don't want to do this, you know. And now, try, because I've been going through some things, you know, and at times in my recovery, like, I get afraid that I don't have anything, you know, to give. And so I was thinking about it. I mean, I've been blank. I want you to know that. So whatever comes out, I've prayed, you know.
too. When I said 1738 D Yorktown Drive, that's my home. And I'll get to that. But I guess, you know, this recovery process for me has definitely been a journey. It's been a journey into finding myself. It's been a journey into learning how to be a mother. It's been a journey with learning how to live in this world. It's been a journey with a God of my understanding. And I remember when I had come back in, I remember saying to someone, the God of my understanding, the God of my understanding is a God I don't understand. But since that time, that has changed. That has changed. Like, I didn't grow up in, like, a very spiritual environment. We were in the Catholic Church for years. And, of course, if anybody knows about Catholics, which I'm sure a lot of people do, you don't get, like, true spirituality in your heart. It's just an outward, manly type, put-together thing, you know. So I remember I always knew about God. I always knew that there was one. I think I always believed that there was one, but I don't think that I believed that there was one for me. And, you know, so in my journey, I came to the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous when I was 22 years old. And in my journey, I remember I was in a treatment center, and one day I was, like, in my room, and I started praying. And I was looking through this spiritual book, and all of a sudden I looked down, and I read this thing, and I read something that pertained to me. And when I read that paragraph that pertained to me, something happened for me, because it was so simple as that it pertained to me, you know. And I know my eyes were opened on a spiritual sense, but since that time I've had to learn a whole lot of things, and I've had to make a lot of mistakes. That's for me, because I don't learn them. I mean, it'd be nice if I'd learn them from somebody else. Now I do at times, because I know I don't feel like going through all this other stuff I don't have to go through if I don't need to go through it. You know, but for the most part, I've had to learn from my own mistakes, you know. And so it's taken me a lot of years to get where I'm at and to get to continuing. You know, that no matter what, continue. You know, no matter what, don't give up. No matter what, don't try to hurt somebody else, myself. Kill myself or whatever, you know, no matter what. And so what I've gone on is my experience. And my experience is that the God of my understanding comes in the nick of time. The nick of time. And like right now in my life, I'm sort of wondering what's going on here. I'm like, okay, you know, because my faith is being pushed to the limit. My faith is really being pushed to the limit. But I came to believe, and like I continue to believe, even if sometimes my beliefs are not real strong, I still have an inkling, a small seed of a belief that keeps me going, thank God. You know, my addiction ended up in the state penitentiary. It had taken, for me, to end up in shooting galleries, to end up on the street, to end up in jail, to end up at all these places, because initially when I first came in, I hadn't been in some places. You know, I hadn't experienced some things. And it was hard for me to identify in a lot of ways. You know, and I shot dope from the door. I shot dope. But it was just that my progression hadn't taken me to the state penitentiary. So, you know, along the road, you know, I had gotten busted, and I got sent to the county, and in the county, I found out I was pregnant with my fourth child. And about 6 months later, I guess it was, they sentenced me to the state penitentiary. And so it was Christmas time. I was up in where they process you, and I was pregnant. I was about eight months pregnant, and I remember that that's when I got my true moment of clarity. Like, that's when I truly saw me for who I was, what I was, who I had become, and it was nobody else's fault anymore. It was nobody else's fault that I didn't know my mother. It was nobody else's fault that I had been adopted. It was nobody else's fault that I had abuse. It was nobody else's fault anymore. It was mine. It was my responsibility, you know, and that was a blessing for me. You know, but it didn't feel like a blessing, because when I was sitting there pregnant, Christmas time, looking out into the yard and the barbed wire, and I went in front of one of the guards, a couple of women and myself had to go there and get the rules, regulations and things, and I'll never forget what this man said, and he said, "You have gone probably as low as you can go." And when he said that to me, like, it just really hit home that, oh, my God, you know, I have gone really low. So, the day wouldn't come, and so they had made arrangements for me to go in and have my labor induced. And walking in there was probably the most shameful thing I've ever experienced, because we had to walk in shackles, you know, of course be with guards like 24/7. They, you know, put me into labor, and I have my son, my fourth child, and like today, that still hurts my heart, you know, because I remember I just would not go to sleep, because I knew that within 72 hours he was going to be taken from me. And I had made arrangements for some people to come up and get him. And that day, when I left that hospital, and they had taken my baby, and they shackle you to the bed and everything. When I walked out of that hospital and got in that vehicle to go back to Muncie, there was this song that was playing on the radio, and it was called "Love Can Break the Chains." And I was crying so bad. Oh my God, I was just hurt so much. I couldn't see. I was crying so bad. I couldn't see out the window. But this song kept playing and playing, and it did something to me. You know, and I got back there, and everything I think came to a head in my life at that time. Like, all my abandonment, all my resentment, all my hurt, all my pain, all my remorse, all my guilt, everything was like ill there. You know, and I didn't know what to do with it. And I opened up a book one day. This was a couple days later, and I opened up a book, and I remember reading it. It was like one of those morning meditation books, and the only thing I can remember in this whole paragraph, but it said, "Let go of the pain." It just said, "Let go of the pain." And that was very simplistic to me. And that's what I did. And that's how I survived. And really, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And really, I had a lot of peace after that. And I did my time, and I did my little job, and I made 17 cents an hour, and I was happy as a day of luck. For real. I was all right. You know? And I remember it was time for my green sheet to come in. And I knew if I didn't do something, I wasn't going to make it. I knew it. And so I had the opportunity and the choice that I could go out here to someone's place or I could go in a halfway house. And years before, I had been at this halfway house. But the choices were that if I went to the halfway house, I would have to stay in longer past my minimum, like pretty much longer. And I made that choice, you know, and I stayed in jail. And so I had the opportunity to go to that halfway house, and that's what I did, you know, and that's what I needed. I needed the structure. I needed people to oversee what I was doing. I needed people to show me the way, you know, and long before this, I had never been willing to really have anybody show me the way, you know. I never even allowed myself really to get involved with females or anything of the kind, you know. And so that from that point on is when I started doing something different, you know. And so my three children at the time were actually, my three youngest, they started coming home. I had gotten out of halfway house and got a job and, you know, the whole thing. And they started coming home. And their father, and I had been with him 13 years, you know, their father got clean. And so we started building a home and we started building a life. And we were actually pretty happy. And I didn't think at the time I had any reservations, but I did. And what ended up happening was, I was talking to a girl last night about this. See, I have this perception of the dream, like the dream, you know. And it's not true, but I still think it's true, you know. And so when the dream fell apart, and I attached myself to the dream because I'm not worthy if I don't have the dream going on, right? So because the dream died, a part of me died because I attached myself to the dream and my worth to the dream. And obviously I wasn't worth enough or worthy enough because I couldn't accomplish the dream, you know. And by the grace of God, and I pray to God, that was the last time that I had decided to use a drug to mask the truth. And I was on a relax for like 3 months. And during that 3 months, I mean, I always went to jail. If I used, I went to jail. You know, and I was blessed because I don't think I could have handled it again. You know, and I remember because the parents that I have today that have raised me coming up, and I never go to their house like that. Like if I've ever been in need of getting clean or something, I just don't go there. And one day I was going to Lancaster, I was going to do some stuff, and let me back up, because last day, like, I would do shit in my addiction, like, I would call the cops and say, is there any warrants for me? You know, like, I would just ask to, you got any warrants? It's Mary Kay, you know. I would go to this old neighborhood that I had grew up in, and there was a hospital there. And I would go in this hospital, and I was sitting in that bathroom all night long shooting dope, because I figured if I was going to OD, at least I could get up and run out to the emergency room and they'd save me. You know? Like, one time I was over in Lancaster, and I was outside of the police station. I had been up for days. And I'm outside the police station, and I thought, I'm going to go on in here. And I went into the police station, and I said, you know, I think I got some warrants here, and I really think that, like, you know, you need to arrest me because I'm outside here. Because, I mean, I needed some help. And, you know, every damn time I wanted to get arrested, they wouldn't arrest me. They wouldn't arrest me. You know, they arrested me any other damn time. But that,
Jeez, that was crazy. Now I forgot what I was going to say before I said that. Help me, Dwayne. What was I saying before I said that? Oh, God, here we go. See, Dwayne, oh, the relapse. This is what it did to me. Like, I have some major memory problems. I really do. I thought that I was neurologically damaged for real. I mean, I was in the detox like this, you know. And I had never, like, drank alcohol. Like, I never got, like, DTs. I guess that was DTs from dope. I don't know. But I was like this, and I felt for sure I was going to stay like that the rest of my life because I couldn't control it. I just couldn't control it. You know, but I got out of the detox, and I remember going home, and see what had happened was I had a big NA wedding, and you know, my husband of 13 years, my three youngest father, he had relapsed, and I took it like real fucking personal, you know, like, I'm not good enough, that's why you, you know what I mean, come on. So, like, I had made a decision, like, that he had to go. And that was, like, one of the hardest things that I ever had to do, you know, but I did it. And this is God in my understanding and the evidence of God in my understanding in my life, because at that time, it was, like, winter time, it was around Christmas time. We couldn't keep the house. I had to keep babies at home. I had lost my damn job. I worked in a hospital. I had started going through a lot of, like, panic and anxiety and stuff. And, I just hung on. Like, I freaking just started going to damn meetings. You know, I started going to meetings. I got a freaking job. You know, I did all the work I needed to do. Matter of fact, that was probably one of the best damn Christmases we ever had. A house opened up, you know, a job opened up, the babysitters opened up, and I didn't have to go back. And when I say go back, I mean go back to the man. Because that was a real stumbling block in my life and in my recovery, you know. And from that, and that's been 3.5 years, and I haven't gone back, and I haven't had the desire to go back, and that's a damn miracle. You know, and so, like, the journey continued, and I guess I had about a year and a half clean. Now, in this time, though, like, I got a sense, like, a self. In this time span, my faith grew. I started learning about spiritual principles. Like, I realize today, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness are definitely, like, indispensable. And that's why I said 1738B Yorktown Drive is my home group. Because, like, I normally pray if I'm speaking, you know, I normally pray it beforehand, and I say, you know, I just need to ask God my understanding and allow me to be as honest as I can be today, you know, and to share what I need to share, you know, and, yeah, what's right again? Huh? Oh. See? okay. I had, I guess it was 2 years when Alicia died. Like, okay. About 2 years into my recovery, you know, I had been praying for years, you know, about the career, and, like, I mean, I try to pray like that, you know, knowledge of your will and the power to carry out. When I came back in, that's what my sponsor told me to pray. You know, I had freaking 30 days clean, and she said, pray for the knowledge of God's will and the power to carry it out. You know, and I throw a couple things in there. Well, if I'm supposed to do your will, then help me to accept your will, too, so it's not really that painful or hard, so I can, you know, I'm a chicken shit like that, I guess, you know. But, like, that's what, like, I try to do. I really do. I try, you know, to do God's will. And, like, I don't do it very gracefully at all, a whole lot of times. We were home one day, and I had gotten a call, and they said my oldest daughter had been in an accident.
and she was 17. And we were on our way to the hospital, and I just, like, started crying. And, I mean, normally, like, I don't cry like that, like, unless I know facts, you know, I don't cry like that. But I just started crying, and I remember I looked up in the sky, and I started, like, white dove in the clouds. And something told me, they were trying to tell me my daughter wasn't okay. Something told me that they were going to tell me that she didn't make it, but I didn't want to believe that. And he looked at me, he said, do you think it's worse than what they're telling you? And I said, yeah. And we got there, and that's probably like, I probably am never going to get over it. I probably am never going to get over it. I've learned to live with it up until today. But it's, to be blunt, well, I'm not going to swear, it has screwed me up really bad. You know, she was my firstborn, and man, the shame and the guilt and the if I would have, if I could have, if I should have, almost freaking destroyed me. Because that's all I could think about is if I would have, if I should have, if I could have. You know, and my grand sponsor told me, anything out of your mouth, anything out in your mind that's saying to yourself, if you should have, if you would have, if you could have, delete it. And I didn't have much to say because that's all that I could come up with. And, you know, that was my other three children, my daughter, my next daughter, she's 14 now, and then my baby, he's 6, and then I have an 8-year-old son, too. And them kids just cried and cried and cried and slept with me for weeks. And I remember at the time I called my best friend because they hadn't told us yet. We was waiting. She was in the operating room. And I called my best friend, and she came out, and she was there when the doctors came out and told us. And my world stopped. It just did. She got on the phone and she started calling the troops, you know, and all the troops came to the hospital. And I remember I didn't want to go to a meeting. And I just didn't want to go to a meeting. So everybody came to my house. Like, I didn't have a desire to get high. I didn't have a desire to run. I, like, got to a point where I didn't feel as though I felt that my other kids would be better off without me because I wish it would have had it been me. And everything that I sort of had accomplished or worked towards or became or whatever, changed. And one weekend, I had, I don't know. It got to the point where, I was still talking, I was still functioning the best that I could, you know, I was going to some meetings, and it had gotten to the point where some things happened with some of my friendships and stuff, and, like, I sent all the kids away. I sent the dog away. Anyone's the dog at the house. I didn't want him there, And I've done all the kids, people's houses, and I had made a decision that, like, I was just gonna fucking end it. Because, like, it was because I felt that they would have been better off without me. I just did. And and my sponsor came to the door that night. Now, 2 weeks after my daughter was killed, my sponsor's son shot and killed somebody. So, it was real hard for her, because we were both so devastated in our own way that it was so hard for us to connect. We just couldn't connect. You know, we hung in there for about a year, not connecting. And then, you know, I moved on and I just got a new sponsor here recently. But I had decided that, you know, that was it. And if I would have put the pen to the paper, because I had decided I was going to write my kids' letter, and I know if I would have put the pen to the paper, I might have done it. You know, and my sponsor came to the door. That's the bottom understanding. You know, and he does come in to make a town. Sometimes he pisses me off because it takes a while. So from that point on, I think, you know, my relationships have changed, some for the better, some for the not the better. But the blessing is that my home and my children and me have something we have never had, ever. You know, my 14-year-old, her and I are like glue. I mean, we're friends. You know, we're companions. I'm her mom, though, don't get me wrong. You know. but, like, I'm real proud of her. You know, and I'm real proud of my son. And I think my perspective's changed on what's important. And now where my life is, I got to make sure I'm in balance of these new perspectives, because I might have gone off to the left a little bit, because my own group, 1738B Yorktown Drive, that's my house. You know, how that came to be was my best friend, she's been my best friend for a lot of years, she couldn't handle it. That's bottom line. And so her and I aren't best friends anymore. And a lot of, to be honest with you, you know, what ended up happening was the boy who killed my daughter, he got a 1-year license suspension, and that's his law in our state, a 1-year license suspension if he killed somebody recklessly, there was no alcohol involved. And, I was like, oh hell no. And what I started doing was fighting. And I started fighting for justice for my daughter. And a lot of people in my support system or in the program in my area really didn't approve of that. Because I ended up being in the media a lot. We were up at the Capitol a lot. And we changed the law in Pennsylvania. It's called Alicia's Justice. And during that time, I found a little bit more me, and I found a little bit more God. I found a little bit more my family, and a little bit more people left my life. But what I learned was that sometimes you walk it alone, you know, and when you walk it alone, you got to find a power greater than yourself, you know, and because I grew with my family, because I built something with my family that had never happened before, it started that I was home a lot. I was taking care of my babies. I was mending their hearts. I was helping them survive, and I was. And I'm working on some resentment I have. And in the process, like, my home group just went out the window. I was talking to somebody last night, you know, and I think where I need to be on my perspective is I need to make a new commitment, you know, and I know I need to be real careful, you know, and sometimes it's okay if you go over here for a second to figure out what's going on, you know, but I know where I came from. I ain't trying to have them arrest me no more, you know. I'm not trying to go to the penitentiary. I'm not trying that, you know. So I need to pray. I need to pray, and I need to ask for some guidance, and I need to ask for some help, you know. And, you know, at this point where I'm at is, like, I know God wants me to change some things, like a whole lot of things, because I'm getting backed up against the wall, and I don't know how I'm coming out with, like, because I'm a felon, I've had some issues, because I've been fired from, like, at least 2 jobs that I know of right now because of that. Like, that's been an issue in my life, has been working. And what ended up happening was I start going into schools, and I start talking to the kids, and at prom and at homecoming, you know, I go in and I share my experience, and we put together a little program, and my daughter, she comes and speaks, and like what ended up happening was some people in the community found out who I was, like the people that I had been working with to get justice for my daughter, like the big guys. Found out who I was, and that didn't go over too good, because they were all beside me, and they were all supporting me, and for Christ's sake, they changed the law in Pennsylvania, and God forbid, it's a chunky felon they was working with, you know, so right now, I guess what I'm doing is I'm reevaluating, what do I need to do, what do I really need to do? You know, what is God's will for me? Because really what ended up happening was I was keeping all that silent of who I am because of anonymity out here, right? And there wasn't no reason for me to say anything about me, my, you know, what I mean. There wasn't no reason, and it wasn't even an issue at the time. And they had asked me, some people had asked me to talk to some kids. And I said to myself one day, you know, what would help that kid more? To tell them where I've been and how you can get up out of it, or to talk at them? And the answer I got was to tell them where you've been. And when I made that decision to tell these kids where I've been, like, some things went wacko. And so I'm more in a self-acceptance thing. I'm going through that thing again, and that's just coming around for me, you know, on a deeper level, like spiritual principles of commitment and love and surrender. They're all spiritual principles, you know. Acceptance. It's like the kind of person I am is I want to meet. So I look through the step guide, and in the step guide, if you go to the one paragraph, each step in the big step guide got spiritual principles for that step. And one time I went through there and I wrote all them down, and I was totally amazed. I was amazed at the spiritual principles, because all I ever heard was honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. You know, so where I'm at right now is, like, I'm hanging in there, I'm speaking. I'm not going backwards. I try to do the right thing. I'm aware of there's a lot of things that I need to change. And I haven't been the most honest person. And I'm going to yield. I'm going to yield. And, like, right now, I don't know what the God of my understanding is doing, but that's okay, because my evidence is he's going to come in the nick of time. He's coming. In the nick of time. I just got to hang in there. It's been a pleasure to be here. I just really enjoy really sweet, and everybody's always so nice to us when we come here. It's very refreshing. Actually, we got to get with our committees because our spiritual tree, you guys got it going on. Because we could use some of the things and how you guys set this up for ours at home. We're going to try to bring some of this together. You ought to come to ours. Ours is next weekend. But thank you very much, and God bless everybody.
Thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing, Kim. Okay. Can we have a reading just...